This is MemberCare Media, a media ministry of TWR. Up next, a conversation we believe will be helpful to you. This is a copyright production of MemberCare Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.
Usually, when you think of an addiction, I'm sure the first words that come to your mind are things like drugs, alcohol, tobacco, pornography, and sex. But an addiction could also include behaviors like out-of-control spending, yelling at the kids, workaholic, gossip, a critical attitude, or anger. So what's behind those behaviors? What can we do about them? Well, expat Christian workers are not immune from addictions, and we're going to learn more about that subject today as MemCare's Jonathan Griffiths visits with a special guest. Carl is his name. He has been a pastor for many years, and he has been and is a counselor to expat Christian workers in many different countries around the world. I hope you'll join me as we listen in on this conversation with Jonathan and Carl.
Carl, is sex addiction different from other addictions? And if so, how?
Well, to use your word, yin.
You need to explain this one.
Okay. Yes and nein. Yes and no.
It's a German word.
Yeah.
The Germans use yin as yes and no.
Yeah, nein, yeah. Yes, it is different from other addictions, and no, it's not. It's very similar. Sexual addiction is not about sex. And it's different in that it differs from alcohol or drug or tobacco addiction because there's no chemical dependency involved, except perhaps adrenaline. Quite often adrenaline is involved in the sexual addiction. But apart from the chemical dependency component, all addictions work the same. We're using whatever it is, substance, activity, or whatever, to soothe the pain, to drug the pain, to numb it, to medicate it, whatever term you want to use. So a sex addict is not using sex to connect with his or her mate. Mm-hmm. They're using it to drug and medicate the pain or relieve the stress. There's no intimacy involved because intimacy is difficult. It's feared. It's hard to come by. And so we do a non-intimate sexual encounter, whatever that looks like.
How has the internet changed things for the sex addict?
It's changed things for the addict just as much as it's changed things for everybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look back in history, communications through the ages has had several key turning points that different people talk about. Thousands of years ago, the verbal communication was transformed by the development of writing. I mean, people discovered that by making a few marks on a piece of pottery or on a rock or on a piece of tree bark, their words could be preserved or passed on to others without having to repeat them. And that revolutionized civilization. Sacred writings and historical accounts could now be kept and copied and passed down for subsequent generations. Then in the 1400s, Gutenberg came along and his printing press again revolutionized communication. Now, instead of the scribes copying manuscripts one by one, the printing press could produce many copies of a document, each one identical to all the others. So the print media changed civilization. Now, the third turning point in communication is the internet, I believe. Just think how communication has changed in the last 25 years, mm-hmm. or 30. Less than 40 years ago, say in the 70s, the only means of communication was letters that took maybe weeks to get there, or very expensive telephone calls. Now, through the internet, we can talk to and even see the other person that we're talking to halfway around the world at virtually no cost. Mm-hmm. When I purchased my first computer 25 years ago, the memory was stored on a cassette tape, believe it or not. I know some of you young guys have a hard time believing that. And it was measured in bytes, mm-hmm. not megabytes or gigabytes. And it was basically just a word processor. That's all it did. Now, I get impatient if it takes me more than a few seconds to access a website. When I did my research for my master's thesis, and even for a lot of my doctoral research, it was in libraries, poring over musty old books, you know, and writing down notes on a legal pad and all that kind of stuff. But now, through the internet, I have access to tons of information that almost on any subject you can imagine, just sitting at home in my office. So the internet has also changed the way we feed our addictions. 25 years ago, if you wanted to view pornography, you had to go to a store that sold it, pay money for it, and hope nobody saw you walk into the store or walk out of the store. And the internet has changed all of that. As Mark Laser says, it's anonymous, it's affordable, and it's accessible. One or two clicks on your computer and you're there. You don't even need to leave the house. So yeah, the internet has changed, particularly sexual addictions.
It's given sex addicts or pornography addicts availability and privacy.
Right.
That was never available before.
Right. That's why it's become a huge problem.
Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Wherever there's an internet access, it's available. Why then are some people more prone to addiction and others less prone?
Paul Mavergeorge from Link Care Center, he calls this the ongoing susceptibilities that we have. Factors that contribute to our susceptibility to addictions. These are factors from our history, our past, and because these factors are there, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that we'll automatically be an addict, but research has shown that there are certain factors present in the past of most addicts. In the case of a sexual addict or pornography addict, usually there's early sexualization, exposure to pornography or sexual activity at an early age, sometimes sexual abuse, those kinds of things. Dysfunctional family, the family that's very rigid or legalistic or very private and exclusive, a cold, non-relational family where there's little affection or affirmation, a perfectionistic family or where there's physical or emotional abuse. All of our families were dysfunctional in some way. I mean, I've never seen a functional family yet, but just because our family was dysfunctional doesn't mean we're going to be an addict. Mm-hmm. But there are some of these things that research has found in the past of all these people. And also there's a sense of guilt and shame that often is there. Feeling unacceptable, feeling flawed, less than perfect if perfection was the requirement. Now, there's a difference between guilt and shame. I might bring that out, too. True guilt comes from the Holy Spirit and leads us to repentance and back to relationship. False guilt and shame keeps us in bondage. It comes from Satan, and it leads to detachment and seclusion and destruction. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference there that we need to make. But our negative beliefs about ourselves, the low self-image, the insecurity, I'm unworthy, you know, things that we tell ourselves, the lies we tell ourselves, if people knew me, they wouldn't like me. Things like that. All of these things set the stage for addictions. See, our past sets that stage. It's the susceptibility that we have to addiction. We're all the product of our past. Most of us grew up in families that were not ideal. Heredity, our role models, our experiences, the hurts and traumas of life have all shaped us. And out of that background, we develop beliefs about ourselves, often lies, and we develop a style of relating to other people. That background was often painful, and that pain we carry with us all of our life. And at the core of addiction is an attempt to relieve that pain in some way. Now, that relief may be only slight, it may be only temporary, but that's the payoff that keeps us coming back.
What then is the impact of pornography on the marriage?
Pornography has been called the victimless crime. It's something a person can do in private. It doesn't involve anybody else, they think. It's non-personal, but it does involve the marriage. It does affect relationships in a number of ways. For one, the pornography addict often will bring unrealistic expectations to the marriage. A guy expects his wife to look like the airbrushed model, or he expects her to do some of the things that that model is paid huge sums of money to do. And the wife may expect her husband to be as warm and romantic as the guy in the romance novel or the guy in the chat room. And when our spouse doesn't meet those expectations, we get angry, we get resentful, and then we feel justified by continued acting out. But God's intention for marriage was intimacy. Intimacy comes from the Latin intima, you know, the inner layers of the membrane around an organ or around your body, the inner layers of your skin. So intimacy really is getting under your skin. In a very real sense, it's getting down to the deep layers of relationship. It's that intimate connection, that connection that you don't have with a lot of people. And that's what we should have with our spouse. The opposite would be disconnection and isolation and that kind of thing. So when we choose pornography, it has the same effect on a marriage as an affair. If the guy is involved, the wife feels violated. She feels betrayed. She begins asking herself, am I not good enough? Trust is gone. She's repulsed by the thought of her husband looking at some other woman, even if it's just a picture. Sometimes the wife doesn't even know about her husband's addiction, but the marriage is still affected, even if the wife doesn't know, because true intimacy and true lovemaking gets short-circuited, because true lovemaking is deeply relational. There's intimate connection. But when pornography enters the picture, sex becomes narrow, it becomes sterile, selfish, demanding, and we have to divorce it from relationship. And that separation from relationship affects the marriage. So instead of making love, mm-hmm. you just have sex. Selfish sex works against relationship and against intimacy. And what often happens is all females, including the wife, become depersonalized objects for selfish gratification. A guy will look at any woman that he sees as an object to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Eye candy, they call it, or something like that. You know, it's for my enjoyment. It's selfish. It's gratifying my base desires. And so sex then becomes a drug to create a high or to numb the pain. Actually, we can depersonalize sex easily enough without pornography. I mean, we men are good at that anyway. If we use sex to relieve stress, to overcome boredom, even to celebrate an accomplishment, we're operating under the same principle as the pornography addict. We're using sex to self-medicate or as a drug. My need to alter my mood is more important than the personhood of my wife. And I'm using her, and what happens is she can feel that. And it doesn't create intimacy. It works against intimacy.
That was Jonathan Griffiths talking with Carl about addictions and how they affect the expat Christian worker.
This feature is a presentation of Member Care Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of Member Care Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.